Govardhanaki Jaya, Vrindavandhamaki Jaya, Maturadhamaki Jaya, Navadvip Mayapuradhamaki Jaya, Jagannath Puridhamaki Jaya, Gangamaya Juna Devi Ki Jaya, Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jaya, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jaya, Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vinaya Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachorni Nivasesa Sanyavani Paskutyade Satana Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishapam Vitam Stam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 It's November 6, 2011 in Melbourne, Australia, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 1, Chapter 3, Krishna is the source of all incarnations, text 43. Krishna swadama bhagate,
Dharma jnana
nivisaha,
Alanasta
dushamesha,
Puranarko
dinodita. Krishna, in Krishna's
Swadhama,
own abode,
Upagate,
having returned, Dharma,
religion,
Jnana,
knowledge,
Adibhi, combined together, Saha, along with Kalau, in the Kali Yuga, Nashta Dristam. Of persons who have lost their sight. Eshaha, all these. Purana Arkaha, the Purana which is brilliant like the sun. Adhuna, just now. Udita, has arisen. There was a film made by Yadubar and Vishaka about the BBT that was centered on this verse. Have you seen that? Yeah. Throughout the whole film, they were going through this, showing the production of BBT books from Prabhupada, dictating them to distributing on the street. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. This Bhagavata Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna has his eternal Dhamma, or abode, where he eternally enjoys himself with his eternal associates and paraphernalia. And so who knows about this except for the Vaishnavas? Well, throughout the world there are so many systems of religion and spirituality. But what do they know of the Lord's eternal abode? You know, we have to say, even the Indian movies, they can't figure it out. They just kind of have Krishna in the clouds like some, you know. Isn't that one of the most attractive features of the Hare Krishna movement, that we know about Krishna's abode? Mm. And his eternal abode is a manifestation of his internal energy. Who's Krishna's internal energy? Whereas the material world is a manifestation of his external energy. When he descends on the material world, he displays himself with all paraphernalia in his internal potency, which is called Atma Maya. And we're so fortunate that Krishna actually comes and displays
He comes to Srimati Radharani, Mother Yasoda, and Nanda Maharaj, all his associates, and displays his eternal boat. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he descends by his own potency, Atma Maya. His form, name, fame, paraphernalia, abode, etc. are not, therefore, creations of matter. He descends to reclaim the fallen souls and to reestablish codes of religion which are directly enacted by him. So what verse is Srila Prabhupada referring to here? Paritranaya sadhana vinashaya to this one. Garma samsarpanataya sambhavani yugeyu. Except for God, no one can establish the principles of religion. What verse is Prabhupada referring to here from Bhagavatam? Bhagavad Pranitam. Yes. Spoken by? Who spoke that? Dharma Tushakshad Bhagavad Pranitam. I'm sorry? Oh, good guess. Anybody else? Try. Yamaraj. To whom was he speaking? To the Yamadutas. Connection with what story? Yes. Except for God, no one can establish the principles of religion. Either he or a suitable person empowered by him can dictate the codes of religion. Real religion means to, this is what I'm going to focus on today, this sentence. Real religion means to know God, our relation with him, and our duties in relation with him, and to know ultimately our destination after leaving this material body. That's Prabhupada speaking about in this sentence. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan. The conditioned souls who are entrapped by the material body hardly know all these principles of life. Most of them are like animals engaged in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. One time Prabhupada was asked, will most people become animals? He said, many will become stool worms. They are mostly engaged in sense enjoyment under the pretension of religiosity, knowledge, or salvation. So Prabhupada says of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, most people are engaged just in kama, and they're pretending it's religion, they're pretending it's salvation, right? They're pretending even it's knowledge. They are still more blind in the present age of Kwaral or Kali Yuga. So I understand that to mean that conditioned souls are generally like that, and in Kali Yuga it's even worse. So if you look at the verse, right? Kalo nashta drisham. What does nasta mean? Destroy. Drista means vision. So you've been blinded. Like somebody's taken some instrument and knocked out our eyes in Kali Yuga. So they are still more blind in the present age of Kwaral or Kali Yuga. In the Kali Yuga, the population is just a royal addition of the animals. Sometimes we see this practically literally. So one time when I was visiting the Soho Temple in London, I went to the local park to chant, which generally isn't a very good idea, but usually you want to go to a further away park to chant, those of you who know Soho. But the building's very, 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 very small, and sometimes you just really need to get out of the building. And there I saw one woman who had her hair, it was very short, and it was dyed yellow with spots on it, so she looked exactly like a leopard. I remember once in New York, seeing a girl who had her cheeks pierced with silver fangs coming out of them. So, and even some people get body modification where they get bumps of silicone put in their foreheads like horns. So this is actually happening. Oh, and there was a billboard, I can't remember where, I think it's also in London where I saw this, can't remember exactly, advertising some blue jeans, and it shows some tiger drinking water, and next to it is some person wearing blue jeans, only blue jeans, and drinking water along with it, like a tiger. You know, and I think the ad was something like, bring out the animal in you. So people in Kali Yuga are very proud of being only a royal edition of the animals. They think that they're... They're intentionally, purposely practicing for their next animal, but it's sort of astonishing. So in the Kali Yuga, the population is just a royal edition of the animals. They have nothing to do with spiritual knowledge or godly religious life. Of course, Prabhupada's speaking here in general. He's not speaking of every single individual, obviously. They are so blind that they cannot see anything beyond the jurisdiction of the subtle mind, intelligence, or ego. Actually, that's very advanced. Because what do most people say at the present time that we are? We're just the... What's the current philosophy of our identity? We are the what? Body. And our personality is the... What's our personality? No, they didn't say the mind. The brain. If you follow the party line. The party line in modern society is we are our brains. That mind and brain are the same. So when you were in school, did anybody in school ever talk about out-of-body experiences?
No.
I mean, was that a topic in school? Ghosts and out-of-body experiences as a serious topic? Did they talk about paranormal phenomena, extrasensory perception as a serious topic in school? Was that even covered? I'm going to give you a little education right now about education. Is that all right? So there's four ways you teach people something. One is what you say you're going to teach them. What you have in your official books, nice color-coded, and you show people. This is every society, by the way, including us. So what you say you're teaching. Then what you're actually overtly teaching, which is very rarely the same as what you say you're teaching. Then, so that's called the planned curriculum and the taught curriculum. Then there's something called the hidden curriculum. The hidden curriculum is things that are not taught overtly. Where you stand, you know, who gets how much of the temple. Those are hidden messages there. Just like when I was a child in America, the reading books only had pictures of people with white skin and usually blonde hair, and they all had Anglo-Saxon names, and they all lived in the suburbs. Every single picture, you can go back and look at the Dick and Jane books. They're all like that. And they realized after a while this is giving a hidden message. So now there's an attempt to make the pictures more inclusive. Pictures of people from different races, pictures of people with handicaps, right? You're aware of this? So that's called a hidden curriculum. Hidden curriculum is how you stand in a queue to get from one room to another. The symbols that we use, our values, things that we may not directly articulate, but they give a very strong message. Then there's what's called the null curriculum. The null curriculum is what you don't talk about at all. You act as if it doesn't exist. The things that are taboo. And every society has a null curriculum. Now, what do you think is most powerful at educating people? The planned curriculum, the taught curriculum, the hidden curriculum, or the null curriculum? The null curriculum. And after that, the hidden curriculum. Like hidden and taught, that's like example and precept. What you do speaks much more loudly than what you say. Okay, so hidden curriculum is more what you do. What are the behaviors? It's like behaviors, symbols. So in modern society, they have a strong null curriculum. That null curriculum is anything to do with the spiritual and even anything to do with the subtle. It just doesn't exist. And this means if you're brought up in this society, you come to believe that anything that has to do with the subtle is the realm of the madmen. Then only crazy people will believe in paranormal phenomena and out-of-body experiences. Because if it was real knowledge, well, it would be taught. It would be there. Even information, of course, Sataputta and Dhruta Karma Prabhu, they outline this in their Forbidden Archaeology. and hidden history of the human race. How much information that's even valid by empiric scientific standards does not make its way into the textbooks, into the science museums, into the Discovery movies and Nova movies? It's as if it doesn't exist. So they will find some human footprints that are 2 billion years old, but they just don't tell anybody about it. They just pretend it doesn't exist. And in this way, people are trained in a certain way. So I see the Srila Prabhupada as being very generous with this statement, because usually people think there's nothing beyond gross matter, that there's all we are is a product of chemicals. After death, there's nothing. We are nothing more than the brain. If you had a brain transplant, you'd become another person. And they just ignore all the equally empirical, not even shastric, but the equally empirical evidence for subtle phenomena. They just ignore it. Okay? So anyway, we'll read this again. The Prabhupada's very generous with this statement. They are so blind that they cannot see anything beyond the jurisdiction of the subtle mind, intelligence, or ego. But they are very much proud of their advancement in knowledge, science, and material prosperity. So they're advertising, we know more than anybody else ever in history. We are the pinnacle of knowledge. But they can't explain a whole plethora of empirically verified phenomena. So if you really want to look at this tendency, then I suggest you read Thomas Kuhn, Structure of Scientific Revolution, which, by the way, is a very difficult book to read. You usually need some sort of notes along with it. But he talks about paradigms, how people have a paradigm. And if there's evidence outside of their paradigm, anomalies, they ignore it. Or they try to explain it away. You know, they're stuck in their paradigm. Now, if the anomalies get big enough, there has to be a paradigm shift. But the paradigm shift doesn't enlarge the paradigm, it just moves it. So they're not expanding their knowledge. That's a lie. And Thomas Kuhn's book is taught at the doctoral level. It's not something that's given out to the people in general. To the people in general, we are expanding our knowledge. We are learning more and more and more, and pretty soon we will know everything. They're lying. It's just like if you have a cloth that has a very elaborate pattern on it, and you look at one part, and then you look at a different part, and then you look at a different part, or the 6 blind men with the elephant. You all know that? You never see the whole thing. You never see the whole elephant. So all the scientists are doing, reality's like a fan. No, reality's like a rope. No, reality's like a tree. No, reality's like a wall. They never get a whole picture. They can't come up with some explanation of reality that shows everything. You can't, through empiricism. One, they're looking for a unified field theory. They'll never find it through empiricism. And yet they want to claim we are so much more intelligent. They can't explain how the Egyptian pyramids were built. And that was so-called a less advanced civilization. What to speak of Machu Picchu in Peru? They haven't a clue how those buildings were built. And that's gross phenomena. You aware of this? They don't talk about this in school, ever. They never say, here's architectural buildings, that we haven't the slightest notion of how they were constructed. That with all of our modern technology, we could not build these. They've got pieces of granite so large, they come from a quarry 200 miles away, so I don't know how many kilometers away. And there is no machinery that could, none that exists in the world, that could move those stones from the quarry through the mountains of Peru to the building site. And there's only 2 cranes in the world now that can lift stones like that and put them on a building. And the stones are put together without mortar. They fit together so perfectly, you can hardly get a needle or a credit card between the stones. They haven't any idea how it was built. That's gross matter. What to speak of subtle phenomena, well documented. Like from Duke University, Mr. and Mrs., what was it, Ryan, I think. Doctor and Dr. Ryan. They did so in this former Soviet Union, because they were trying to use it for military purposes. So many experiments into clairvoyance and ESP and what do they call when you can lift objects with the mind? Levitate, yeah, but there's a word. Telekinesis, yes. So many experiments like that. And you can read these experiments. but they can't explain it. So just we just don't talk about it. It's not there. But we are so knowledgeable and intelligent. We know everything. And as Prabhupada says in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, spiritual realization, that's a myth. So this is how blind they are. How blind. They're only seeing gross matter. They can't even explain simple things about gross matter, what to speak of subtle matter. They can't even acknowledge the existence of spirituality, and yet, oh, we are very intelligent. So let me read this again. They are so blind, in fact, they cannot see anything beyond the jurisdiction of the subtle mind, intelligence, or ego, but they are very much proud of their advancement in knowledge, science, and material prosperity. They can risk their lives to become a dog or hog just after leaving the present body, for they have completely lost sight of the ultimate aim of life. Now, we should look at this not with pride, but with compassion. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna appeared before us just a little prior to the beginning of Kali Yuga, and he returned to his eternal home practically at the commencement of Kali Yuga. While he was present, he exhibited everything by his different activities. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita specifically and eradicated all pretentious principles of religiosity. And prior to his departure from this material world, he empowered Sri Vyasadeva through Narada to compile the messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And thus both the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are like torchbearers for the blind people of this age. In other words, if men in this age of Kali want to see the real light of life, they must take to these two books only. Okay, when Prabhupada makes a statement like that, does that mean we shouldn't read Chaitanya Charitamrita? Prabhupada sometimes makes statements that sound absolute, and one has to understand them in context. Prabhupada's not saying you should only read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and not read Chaitanya Charitamrita, not read Ishopanishad, not read Upadeshamrita, not read Nectar Devotion. So why is Prabhupada saying these two books only? What's Prabhupada's point about these two books? At least start with these. At least know these. At least know these. So sometimes we see today in our Hare Krishna movement that there has become a tendency to read all kinds of other books first. Especially, how do we say, very Rasika books. Bona fide books, undoubtedly. Or maybe some are not bona fide, but most they're bona fide. They're written by our acharyas. But people will sometimes read these books before they've even read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So this tendency is happening because everywhere you go now, every temple, every internet shop, though they're selling these different books. So at least know Bhagavad Gita thoroughly first. Read Srimad Bhagavatam, then Chaitanya Charitamrita, and at least the main smaller books, Nectar Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Ishopanishad. And Prabhupada wanted that, right? It's our basic Bhakti Shastri course. Read at least once to read them thoroughly before one goes on in reading other books. And if one is reading other books, you know, after you've been chanting Hare Krishna for like 10, 15 years, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and Radhakund said after 10, 15 years of chanting, you know, so 10, 15 years of following the process and you know these books of Srila Prabhupada thoroughly, then you continue to read the books of Srila Prabhupada and then you can consider reading these other books. And please don't delve into them. They're there. It's like your mother and father when you were little, maybe they said first you eat your rice and dal and then you can have a gulab jamun. So we're not against gulab jamuns. Prabhupada said we're not boycotting the gopis. So they are worshipful deities. So we are certainly interested in gulab jamuns. But don't just eat gulab jamuns. At some point, maybe. But anyway, not a good idea. And also to listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures and conversations. Sometimes people, especially Westerners, have difficulty understanding Srila Prabhupada. It just takes a little time. Right? It's worth sticking with it. You may have to listen for a week or so before you can understand the accent. But you'll find that Prabhupada emphasizes certain things in his books that he doesn't touch on much in his lectures. You'll find things in Prabhupada's purports that he never talks about in his lectures. So if you just listen to the lectures and don't read the books, you'll miss a lot. And in the lecture, Srila Prabhupada shows what he's emphasizing for the preaching. So you get both the whole picture from the books and you get Prabhupada's preaching emphasis from the lectures. And from conversations, you really get Srila Prabhupada's relationship with his disciples. So you get something different from all three, and you want to have a steady diet of all of them. So Prabhupada's emphasizing especially Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, if men in this Kali want to see the real light of life, they must take to these two books only, and their aim of life will be fulfilled. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of the Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the summum bonum of life. Lord Sri Krishna personified. It's quite a statement. And tomorrow, unfortunately, tomorrow being Monday, probably most of you won't be able to be here. But tomorrow we're really going to focus on how Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Krishna personified. And how one can see Krishna by rapt hearing and proper purified hearing of the Bhagavatam. When I found out I was going to give class on this verse, and particularly tomorrow's verse, I was so happy. We must therefore accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the direct representative of Lord Krishna. One who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can see also Lord Sri Krishna in person. They are identical. I one time had the great fortune to attend a Bhagavatam class by our second generation devotee Radhika Raman Prabhu, also known as Ravi Gupta. And at least I could see that he experienced that Bhagavatam and Krishna were exactly the same. And I can say that Krishna manifested in the temple room as he spoke the Bhagavatam. It was an amazing experience. So at least I know that that is a fact, although we may not always experience it. Oh, what a statement, huh? One who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can see also Lord Sri Krishna in person. You say, well, I see Bhagavatam, some paper, ink, and stitching. What do we actually see? Krishna is a Pagate dharma gyanani bi saha kalo nashta adrasam esha pura narko duno ditaha. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So what is the light we're getting? Real religion means to know God, our relation with him, and our duties in relation to him, and know ultimately our destination after leaving this material body. To know who I am, what is my goal, and how to achieve it. So I'd like you to think for a minute, have you ever had a real dream of what you wanted to do in life? I think most people have a dream in life. At least we had one maybe when we were young. I wish I could do this. I wish I could be this. So maybe some of you know what your dream is. Maybe some of you are living your dream. Maybe some of you are achieving your dream. I'd like us to think for a moment. What's your dream? What would you like to achieve? You could achieve anything you wanted. We did a really nice exercise in Auckland, which I've done with devotees over many years, where we meditate on what we'd like to offer to Srila Prabhupada. We did this on Prabhupada's disappearance day. What we'd like to offer to Srila Prabhupada, to our Guru Maharaj, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If I could offer anything I wanted, if I had no constraints of money, of talent, of knowledge, if I had all the resources at my disposal, what would I want to offer? What would be my dream? Where would I find myself? You know, the famous psychologist Abraham Maslow, he talked about a hierarchy of needs. Any of you familiar with that? And what did he say the top one was, do you know? Self-actualization. Being in your right place, finding yourself, where you fit, where you feel, yes, this is me, this is what I want to be doing. Here I'm being completely fulfilled. So that starts with identity. It starts with identity. You know, psychologists and psychiatrists, they research that we don't make decisions in life based on weighing the pros and the cons, generally. We may think we do, but that's not really how we decide what we want to do. We don't look at things and say, well, I'll get this benefit and I'll have this problem and let's see, let me weigh them out and figure it out and do what will give me the greatest benefit. It's not how we do it. We think about, who am I? Who am I? What kind of a person am I? Now, it usually starts with, am I male or female? Am I old or young? What country am I a citizen of? What culture do I belong to? What family do I belong to? What type of personality do I have? What kind of talents that I have? And then what we do is we create mentally an idealized identity of ourselves. If I were the perfect form of who I am, what would I do? And that's how we decide what to do. And using the psychology, people were able to get people in Texas to clean up the trash on the side of the road. They were thinking of making rewards and punishments. It was one of the worst states in America for littering. And instead they found out who littered. It was mostly young men. And they decided to appeal to their identity as Texans. So they made advertisements of sports heroes who were known as real Texans. And they would find litter on the side of the road, and on the advertisements they'd like crush the beer cans. And they'd say, we're going to find who did this because you don't mess with Texas. And it was such a successful advertising campaign that within a couple of years, the littering in Texas was less than that in the rest of America. Because they appealed to identity. If you're a young Texan man, you don't litter. That's not what young Texan men do. And that's how we make our decisions. All right, I'm an Indian. What do I do? What does a proper Paka Indian do? That's how we decide what we do. You know, or I'm a good husband. What does a good husband do? What does a good wife do? There's a devotee email conference called Dharma Putney that my daughter is a member of. And she's, you know, they get together. What does the Dharma Putney do? And that's how they decide their actions. So that's really how we decide. What is my goal? Again, we have this goal. I want to be a perfect Australian, or I want to be a perfect Indian, or even, you know, your state. I am not just Indian, I'm South Indian. We are like this, and we are like this. Right? I'm a South Indian woman, and I have to do this like this. I am a mother-in-law, I do this. I am a good son, I have to get A's on my report card. That is what a good son does. Or even, I am an ISKCON member, so I have to do this. That's also a new party, or can be. So before you can decide your goal and your action, you have to have an identity. All goals and actions start without an identity. You can't decide anything. What am I supposed to do? First, I have to know who I am. And one reason we take life after life, by the way, is to try on different identities. I wonder what that's like. Oh, I wonder what that's like. I wonder what it's like to be that. What would it be like to be a Peruvian man who's very reserved? Let me try that out. I wonder what it'd be like to be a tiger. Let me try that out. So we try on different identities. Maybe I'll be able to enjoy this way. Maybe I'll be able to enjoy that way. No, let me try to enjoy this way. And it's all puna charvita charananam. It's all the same thing. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. A different, in a diamond pot, in a gold pot, in an iron pot, in a paper plate. You know, plastic container. Same thing. So first we have to get our identity straight. Therefore, when the devotee, Prabhupada once asked the devotees, how do you preach? They say, we first establish that there's a God, and Krishna's God. He said, no. First you establish you're not this body. So that's the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. You're not this body. You're a soul. And who are you? Mama Hamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhutta Sanatana. Jiva Eraswara Paya Krishna Anityadasha. Sarvapadi Vinirmuktan Tatpartena Nirmala. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevana Bhakti Vichate. How can you serve the senses of Rishikesha? First you have to know, I'm not these upadis. I'm not male, I'm not female, I'm not South Indian, I'm not Bengali, I'm not Gujarati, I'm not Australian, I'm not a Kiwi. I'm not from Botswana, sorry. I'm not from South Africa, I'm not from, where's our Botswana lady? There she is. I'm not from America. Who else do we have here? We have any Russians? Gotta have Russians in this Khan temple nowadays. Any Russians? Not Russians? There's some of them. Not from Argentina, or where else do people from? Chile, Nepal, Malaysia. And we have a cultural identity that goes along with that, don't we? We really do. Prabhupada would sometimes appeal to that. He'd say, what's the use of being an American if you can't do something wonderful for Krishna? We have a sense. This is how you're, you know, if you're from Chile, you behave like this. If you're from Botswana, you behave like this. Isn't it? Right? So if we start to think, I'm a soul. At first, that's a sort of a vague thing because it's all just not. Not jayate, not miyate. Don't die. You're not born. You can't get hurt. You're not old. You're not. Well, what am I? Krishna does. Okay, first, even that's sort of vague. Okay, Krishna's servant. A little vague. But at least we can have some idea. What does Krishna's servant do? What's the idealized form of a soul who's a servant of Krishna? What's my ideal? My ideal is to enter into Krishna's abode with him. Swadhama. Krishna has an abode. And I have a place in that abode. I have my own place called my sthaibhava. Something that's fixed. Who I really am. And my goal is to achieve that. My goal is to awaken ultimately who I am. And who I am is in relation with Krishna. It's not in relationship with where this body happened to take birth. It's not even in relationship to my mental personality in this life. That's also an upadhi. Some of us are very outgoing, some of us are very reserved. Some of us like to be busy with a task. Some of us like to be with people. Some of us want to be a leader. Some of us want to be a team player. Some of us are very cautious and careful and deliberate. Some of us are really fast-paced and risk-taking. Some of us are more motivated by rewards. Some of us are more motivated by punishments. It's a fact. Anna, you know that. You can tell what you do to yourself. Are you always telling yourself, focusing on what you do right? And saying, yes, I did that right, yes, I, or are you always focusing on what you did wrong? No, I did that wrong. So we're not even those things. We're not even those particular nuances of material personality. We try on different personalities in different lifetimes, too. The famous actress Julia Roberts, who's now become a Hindu, she said, in my next life, I want to be some quiet background person. So we do that. One life we're outgoing, one life we're reserved, one life we're cautious, one life we're risk-taking. We're not on any of those things. So our goal is to revive who I am. And that is, Prabhupada says, your real religion. Now, the first time I met Srila Prabhupada, my father was there in the room, and he asked Prabhupada, he said, all right, if I come to the temple, even though I have my own religion. Just like, you know, some Hindu temples, you can only come in if you're Hindu. So my father wasn't sure if he was being disrespectful by coming in and keeping his own religion. He did at one point, for about 2 years, kind of become a devotee. Anyway, Prabhupada said, yes, that's all right. He said, there can be many religions, just like we are in Chicago. There can be many planes going to Chicago, but they have to know they're going to Chicago. Said, so you can have many religions if you know what is religion. Said, the real religion is to know God and to love Him. And this prophet says here, most people are engaging in sense gratification in the name of religion. Come to church and eat a chicken dinner. Come to church and play bingo. I don't know if you have in Australia, but in America, you know what's bingo? It's a gambling game. So in America, the churches all advertise bingo. Come and gamble in church. You know, or come into our church, we'll have a boy-girl teenage dance. I remember my husband telling me this. He said, yes, my church, they wanted to bring in more people, so we'll have boy-girl dances in the church. So sense gratification in the name, we're calling it religion, and it's something else. At best, people are wanting pious sense gratification. Let's go to heaven. I remember when I was on book distribution as a very, very new devotee, and I asked, some Christians were bothering me, and I said, so what is your goal? They said, we're going to go to heaven. I said, what will you do there? Oh, the same thing we are doing now. I said, will you watch television? What to say, they kind of walked away. So that's you know, a little higher. They have a goal, I'm going to go to heaven, or I'm going to make the earth heaven. There were some religious systems. They say our goal is to make the earth into swarga, or a little higher than that, let me just free of suffering. The material world is a miserable place. Let's just like breathe and flow in the ocean of the Brahma Jyoti and get salvation. So very few people even are looking for that. Most people are looking for animal sense gratification in the name of religion. But real religion, as given in the Bhagavatam, Kaitava Dharma is projected, thrown out, is to reveal who I am. Yadhyatma Supersedati, that's what's going to satisfy me, knowing who I am. How can I be satisfied trying to be the ideal of something I'm not? How can I be satisfied trying to be the ideal of something I'm not? If I try to be a perfect man, that's not going to work. Or if a man tries to be a perfect woman, or even if I as an American try to be a perfect Indian. I actually tried that for a while. I was telling the group yesterday, that's like dyeing your hair in the Roots show. That doesn't work for the Indians who try to be perfect Westerners. Sorry, all of you, but you don't do a very good job. How are you going to be satisfied being a perfect example of what you're not? I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. If I act perfectly according to this body and mind, which I can't really do anyway, there'll be so many flaws. Krishna says, every material occupation there'll be smoke on the fire. Let me be perfectly who I am. That's religion. Religion is not a sense of codes of piety and sin and rituals and certain prayers and certain kinds of clothes. And that may be religion in a legal government sense, so the government knows who to give tax exemptions to. And that's not religion. Religion means I find myself. Who am I? I develop my rasa. Rasa means, first of all, I have my saiva. I have my particular relationship with Krishna. We talk about five of them. Right? Neutrality, servant, friend, parental, conjugal. But there are many, many subcategories. So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami explains some of the subcategories. In Ujjwala Nivamani, he explains more of the subcategories of the Madhurya rasa. Right, there's this kind of cow boy and that kind, this kind of cow. You know Krishna also chants japa? You know that? He has japa beads. You know what they're made of? It's in Krishna book. Jewel, yes. And whose name does he chant on his japa beads? Do you know? Cows. I mean, when Mahaprabhu was chanting the names of the gopis, his students became upset. You know, imagine he's chanting the names of the cows. So Krishna is chanting the names of the cows, and each colored bead represents a different group of cow. So many subcategories, and sub-sub, until it comes to you and you and you and you. Each of us has our own personal relationship with Krishna. So that's the sthaibhava. Then there's the vibhava, what brings out our relationship with Krishna, which is Krishna himself, the abode of Krishna's love, like the devotees, like Mother Yasoda, Srimati Radharani. And the Udipan, how Krishna is so, how he plays his flute, how he's so soft, How he's so clever, all of Krishna's qualities, his beautiful threefold bending form, his wonderful activities, like we're singing in the Dhammadharastika. Namo Radhikaya, Tadiya Raya, Namo Nandalimaya, all your unlimited pastimes, wonderful pastimes. Krishna's abode is not a boring place. And even Vaikuntha, Krishna's riding on the back of Garuda, standing up on the back of this big eagle, interplanetary travel, standing on the back of an eagle. And he's a young boy. So any Krishna never ages past about 15. So those of you here, some of you here may be about 15, or if you remember when you were 15, he's a young boy. He's very playful. So one is attracted by Krishna's pastimes, his quality, his name, his paraphernalia, his flute. These bring out a feeling, oh, Krishna's my friend, or Krishna's my lover, or Krishna's my son, or Krishna's my master. That feeling is invoked by Krishna. And then one does activities, anubhava. One demonstrates, therefore we say devotional service, devotion and service. Anushilana, Rupa Goswami says. Shilana means two kinds of action, internal and external. Not just, I love Krishna, but I don't do anything. And not that I do something with no love. Like the wife is doing the laundry, the servant is doing the laundry. The wife has love, servant doesn't. Generally. And not just love. I took a devotee once to get some surgery early in the morning in the hospital. It was Sunday. And Sunday in America, television says all these evangelical Christians are doing their shows. So they were showing one Christian show after another while we were in the waiting room. And these guys get together and they hold hands and they say, "We love Jesus." I remember, which is nice sentiment. Years and years ago at the Boston Temple, the Sunday feast, this guest came. She said, "Well, I'm a disciple of Jesus." I said, "That's wonderful." And I asked her, "Suppose I didn't know that and I just looked at your life. How would I know?" She said, "You couldn't. It's all in my heart." Now, there are people, we're not going to pick on the Christians because there are Hindus like this too and Vaishnavs like this too. You know, people who show up just on Vyasapuja Day. Oh, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. No, we have that too. Singling out. So, devotional service. Devotion and a manifestation of that devotion. Both. Love means action. But not just action devoid of love. Both. Prabhupada says, even if you can't follow everything, it's not nice purport in Bhagavad Gita, says, even if you can't follow everything, do some work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. So that's anubhava. Anubhava, you do something, you manifest that I'm Krishna's servant and I have some feeling for him. I'm doing something, whatever it may be. Give him some incense. You know, patram pushpam palam prayam yome bhakta prayatati. Tadam bhavi paritam. Ashtami prayat nama. Give him a little water. Krishna's so nice, he's satisfied with water. Try to satisfy someone else with just water. My dear wife, I'm giving you water, only water. No house, no clothes, no jewelry, no food, just water. And Krishna's satisfied with water. Little tulsi leaf, little bit of food. Manmana bhagamad bhakto majaji mamnarasu. Just bow down. Think about me. It's the essence we were reading yesterday. The essence is just to think about Krishna. He's happy, you just think about him. That's one of Krishna's qualities. He's grateful. Materially conditioned souls are not very grateful. We're really not very grateful. We notice how people are not grateful for us, but we might want to notice sometimes how grateful we are to others. You know, I think all of us are aware that sometimes we really do a lot of sacrifice for something and nobody notices. You think about all the times in your life, you really did a lot of sacrifice. You gave up some time that you really wanted to spend doing something else, or money that you really wanted to spend on something else. You worked behind the scenes, you didn't get enough sleep. You had to deal with all kinds of critical people and all sorts of obstacles. The machines you were depending on didn't work, and this happened, and that happened, the other thing. You still got everything done to a high standard of quality on time, and nobody even noticed. Or maybe even you got criticized. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And so Krishna is very grateful. One devotee recently gave me what I would consider a very high compliment. She said, "Aurelia, you're good at looking behind the curtain." So I'm trying to practice that, to meditate on what kind of sacrifices people are doing that I don't see. What actually is going on in their life. Just even to talk about that changes people. By the way, if you really want a community that's like Vaikuntha, which is a community of mutual appreciation, that's a simple way to do it. Meditate on what sacrifices people are making that you don't see, and just verbalize it. You don't have to do it every day, but at least periodically. "Oh, Prabhu, I noticed that you always do your service on time. That must mean that, you set your alarm clock, you get up even when you haven't had enough sleep, you must be getting up even when you don't feel well, you must be coming even when you have some emergency at home, and even when there's other things to do, and still you come. Every time you do your service on time." People are like, "Wow." So Krishna is very, 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 very grateful. He notices everything, and therefore the devotee is happy to do any little service for Krishna. And Krishna is equally happy, by the way, with the big services and the small services. Prabhupada puts so much emphasis on this. He said, whether you're bathing the deity, whether you're washing the floor, whether you're washing the pots, whether you're distributing books, please don't think you have to be a so-called big devotee to please Krishna. That's not true. In fact, some of the most advanced devotees I know in the Hare Krishna movement are little devotees. So that's anubhav. Do something. And do something, what you do for Krishna should be as far as possible. Now, this is interesting. This is really interesting. According to our upadis. Huh? I thought we were supposed to get rid of all of our upadis. But yet Krishna tells Arjuna, you have your nature in the material world. He said you can't repress it. Your choices are use it for me or use it for Maya. That's it. No other choice. If you use it for me, you'll get perfection and I'll help you. He said, if you use it according to your false ego, not hearing me, you'll be lost. Third chapter, 18th chapter. And anything repeated by a good teacher is important. Good teachers repeat the important things. And good teachers have the important things at the end. So Krishna has that in his summary. So how interesting. The way to get free of our upadis and the way to find who I really am and develop real religion is to act, first of all, according to my spiritual identity. That's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. That's, no upadis are considered for that, or shouldn't be. Whether you're old, young, whether you're Peruvian, or Botswanian, or American, or Chilean, whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, whether you have 150 IQ or 50 IQ, whether you have really good health and you're really strong, or whether you can barely get out of bed in the morning, whether you're married, whether you're not married, Grihin Tempo, Vane Tempo. Chant Hare Krishna. You offer your food to Krishna. You read this Bhagavatam. That's for everybody. And then we also have activities according to our conditioned nature. How interesting. Because what happens when you offer everything in the fire of sacrifice? It becomes what? It becomes spiritualized. Bhagavad Gita 4:24. Everything becomes merged into transcendence. That's the way to get free of the upadis. Use them in Krishna's service. Be an Indian for Krishna, be a Chilean for Krishna, be a woman for Krishna, be a man for Krishna, be a wife for Krishna, be a husband for Krishna, be a parent for Krishna, be a temple president for Krishna, be a whatever for Krishna. And then it'll all start being just for Krishna, for Krishna, for Krishna, for Krishna. It won't be any more I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other thing. It'll just be, I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm just using this. I happen to have a bicycle this life. Okay, I'll use that for Krishna. I happen to have a motorboat this life. Okay, I'll use that for Krishna. And don't envy anybody else's vehicle. Waste of time. Then you'll just get that one next life. You know, but your focus is, I'm going to Krishna. You know, he's going in a plane. I'm going with a motorboat. He's going on a skateboard. Whatever. You know, we're all going to Krishna. So how do we enter into this real religion? How do we find a way that we can develop? Oh, well, I didn't give the other parts of our identity issue the last two. There's vaikari bhava, which is occasional feelings of emotion, And there's also sattva-gubhav. Sattva-gubhav is our involuntary displays of being who we really are. The tears and shivering and all the things Mahaprabhu begs for. He says, prema dana vina vyarta daridra jivana dasa kori bhetan mori deha prema dana. If you're Bengali, I'm sorry, I just butchered your language. But bhetan is a salary. Dasa kori bhetan mori, give me a salary. We have a lot of propaganda. Devotees should work without salary. But Mahaprabhu wants a salary. So it's bona fide. What's the salary he wants? What's the dana, the wealth he wants? Prema, give me the salary of love. And this is an expansion of the Sikshastra verse. When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love? For constantly will I chant your holy name. When will my voice be choked up? When will the hairs on my body stand on end at the recitation of your name? These are the sattvika bhavas. These are involuntary. So anubhava is what you do. I make a garland for Krishna. I sell books for Krishna. I work at the bank for Krishna. I change my baby's nappies for Krishna. Whatever it is. I take pictures for Krishna. I do the accounting for Krishna. I drive my car for Krishna. I take a shower for Krishna. And the sattvika bhavas are involuntary expressions of love. So how do we come to this point of real religion that will give us this ultimate satisfaction, that will be our self-actualization? We first of all admit that right now I'm blind. I'm in a dark prison of my own making. Of my own making, I created this prison through my own desires. It's not Krishna's fault. It's not even Kali Yuga's fault. It's not Durga Devi's fault. I built the prison. I wanted it. Open the window and let in the sun. This Bhagavatam is just like the sun. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali should get light from this Purana. Allow the sun to penetrate the darkness. Bathe in the sun. Drink the sun. We'll be talking about drinking the sun next. Pibhatiye bhagavata atmanasatam. Katam vitam shravana puteshu sambhatam. Punanti te vishaya vidushvita swayam. Prajati tachacharna sarorohantikam. Jiva Goswami identifies that verse as the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, although it's in the second canto. Pibhatiye bhagavata. Pibhanti. You know what pibhanti means? Drink. Drink this sun. Don't just read Bhagavatam as something official. Okay, I did my Bhagavatam reading for today. I came to Bhagavatam class. I was busy doing something else. I didn't pay any attention. Clocked in my time. Just like I was telling my grandson, if you want to travel without jet lag, because I travel a lot and never get jet lag, you know one thing I do? Go out in the sun. And you go to a new place, you go out in the sun, and it resets your time clock, because there's certain body chemicals that are formed in sunlight and in darkness. It tells your body this is the daytime. So get out of the sun of the Bhagavatam if we want to get reset times to the time zone of Goloka Vrindavan. And we don't want jet lag on the way. And you absorb yourself in the sun. Drink it. Bhavanti Vidkarna Rasayana Kata. It's a Rasayana. You all know what a Rasayana is? In Ayurveda, Rasayana is something that you immediately digest and immediately gives you nourishment. Like locally grown tree ripened fruit, that's a Rasayana. Or milk taken right from the cow, and not a cow that's fed, who knows what, but you know, a loved cow, a cared for cow that's eating grass. And you the milk right from the cow. It's a Rasayana. You know, modern food, you eat it and you have to take a few hours before you recover from eating it. It doesn't give you energy, it makes you tired. One time when I was in Mayapur, the devotees made a feast of all locally grown organic food cooked according to Ayurvedic principles, and afterwards I was so energized. So this Bhagavatam is a Rasayana. Bhavanti Vidsayana, go to first to the heart. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says the holy name also, which enter the heart and then come up through the mouth. So to take to Krishna consciousness like that, And that is some official religion. Even if by your good fortune, it happens to be the culture of your birth. Good side, bad side to that. Good side to that is natural, it's easy. Bad side, you can think, oh, it's my culture, it's my religion. And it can become another upadhi. Well, make it really, you make yourself a living Bhagavatam. Please don't think this just applies to someone else is supposed to become living Bhagavatams and we're all supposed to remain hog dogs, camels, and asses. No, we're also supposed to become living Bhagavatam. That we have drunk the sun. That we are drinking, always drinking the sun. Through our ears, expanding in our heart, coming out through our mouth, coming out through our activities. That our lives are molded on the Bhagavatam, that our mind is saturated with Bhagavatam, which gives us the knowledge who I am, what is Krishna, what is his abode, what a wonderful abode is described in the Bhagavatam. Who has a Shastra like this? Anybody in the world have a Shastra like this? We go to other religious systems. We offer all obeisances to all the other religious systems of the world. But I tell you, go there and you ask, who am I? They don't know. Simple question. Who am I? What happens to death? No idea. Who's God? He's great. That's nice. How is he great? We don't know. Don't ask those questions. I was actually studying in the Jewish Theological Seminary and they told me, don't ask those questions. I said, it said God wrote on the tablets with his finger, but you're telling me God has no form. So how does he write a note with his finger? What's his finger? Don't ask those questions. They said. So who has a scripture like this? Let us become Prabhupada dedicated so much to translating this Bhagavatam for us. Translating it, having it in very Pukka English with a beautiful layout and printing and the whole illustration department. Everything. Just so we could, not so we can have it on our shelf, which is nice too to have one on your shelf, that's useful. Not just so we can officially go, but so we can become absorbed. Krishna Das Kaviraj writes, actually this is Kundalata speaking to Jatila about Krishna. She said, the sun brings happiness to the lotus, but it blinds the owls. So let us be like a lotus and not like an owl. And let our heart blossom in the beautiful light of this Bhagavatam. Then we will find ourselves. We will know what our duty is externally. We will awaken our real Swadharma internally. We will achieve actual self-actualization. We will actually find ourselves and come to real Sanatan Dharma, which gives us total satisfaction. So this is being offered now by the Hare Krishna movement. And Prabhupada says, do not take your birth again and again in this Kali Yuga. We may not get another opportunity. Krishna says that those who fall down after a slight practice of yoga, where do they go? To the heavenly planets. By the time you take birth again, Mahaprabhu's movement will be over. So we may not have another opportunity like this, this level of dharma. And Mahaprabhu only comes once in the day of Lord Brahma. And we are being given absolutely the highest information, how to enter into Krishna's abode, what are the four higher rasas. We have information even above Vaikuntha. Thank you very much for letting me speak on this verse. And it was a wonderful kirtan, but it did go on a little late, so that's my excuse. So we can have just a few minutes if there are any questions or comments or additions or subtractions or chastisements. Every once in a while you get those. Yes? That is a fascinating question. What is the influence of the modes of material nature on personality types? I give a whole seminar on personality types. Like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Let's see. like 1 minute. How many other people are interested in this? Okay, we'll do 3-4 minutes. Okay. How many of you would consider if you had to choose between whether you were a cautious, careful, deliberate person or kind of a ready, fire, aim, risk-taking person. So the cautious person, they like to know what's going to happen, like they have a schedule, they like to do a lot of research before they make decisions. And the risk-taking person, they make a decision, they just want to go for it. Do something exciting, have change in their life. How many of you would say, if you had to choose, because we all have some of each, if you had to choose, how many of you would say that you were risk-taking people? Okay. The rest of you, I assume, are all cautious people. So you can raise your hands like this. Okay. Let's take the risk-takers easier. So we'll do that. Let's take a risk-taking person in the mode of ignorance. What would a risk-taking person in the mode of ignorance do? Wouldn't wear a seatbelt. What else? Get drunk. Take some sort of intoxication. What other kinds of things would a risk-taking person in ignorance do? Drive very fast. Crazy sports. Well, what do we see in Auckland? Bungee jumping off the Sky Tower. For $200 for 15 seconds. Okay, risk-taking person and passion. By the way, I find the mode of passion is not very well understood. The mode of passion, you do good things for the wrong reasons. The mode of goodness, you do the right things for the right reasons. The mode of passion, you do the right things for the wrong reasons. The mode of ignorance, you do the wrong thing for the wrong reasons. Mode of passion, very righteous. The epitome of passion is a king, a righteous king. So risk-taking in the mode of passion.
Loud music.
Loud music. I put that ignorance. No, that's ignorance. Spending a lot of money on? Probably on charity. Mode of passion person, the king is the main giver of charity in the society. So spending a lot of money on good works, probably more than you can afford, so that people will praise you. Your purpose in spending a lot of money. And I met somebody, ostensibly a devotee, who was doing that, who promised millions of the currency, I won't say what currency, but millions of their currency to do all sorts of projects, and they didn't actually have the money. And so the devotees, believing that this person had the money, made all sorts of arrangements with the government, a lot of publicity, and promised people all sorts of money, and then it turned out the person really had no money, and it was a real problem. Mode of passion ends in misery. So that's risk-taking, the mode of passion. Promising money for some good works that you don't really have. Okay, what would be risk-taking in the mode of goodness? Trying to save someone's life, okay? Now, that depends on your motive. If you're trying to save someone's life so you get a medal, that's a mode of passion. If you try to save someone's life out of duty, that's a mode of goodness. So, yeah, running in front of enemy fire to save someone's life, going into an epidemic zone to work as a doctor, giving up your education and your source of income to become self-realized. Mode of goodness is aiming for purification and personal salvation. Okay, what's a risk-taking devotee? Transcendental risk-taker. Preaching where? Preaching in a Muslim country. Okay. Bhaktivedanta Swami talked about having to chant his japa in the bathroom of the trains. Okay, so risk-taking devotees in ISKCON, those are the people, they're in a different city every few days. They don't even know what city they're going to be in. Right, they're preaching in dangerous places. Okay? Let's see if we can go a little faster through the cautious one. Cautious people in mode of ignorance. They might not do anything. Just watch the same television show every day and drink the same beer every day. The same show. They get stuck in some job that's not satisfying, not worthwhile, not fulfilling, and they don't change. It's too hard to make a change. Right? Okay, cautious person, mode of passion. trying to work harder and harder, but very carefully so. They're really careful with their budget, that they're not going to give more to charity than they can afford. They're very careful about where they invest their money. They didn't want to risk anything.